behind doing a self-organized forest visit. This, the time is now, and this is an important body of work that everyone can participate in.
Yeah, you've been doing great work, and I just saw that video that we're putting out. It looks beautiful, and I think people will be really inspired to take action. So whether you live near the Siuslaw National Forest or not, definitely go to coastrange.org, check out those action pages. There's a lot of ways to get involved. So thank you so much for joining us today, Chuck. We will check in with you again soon and often as this process plays out.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. We are on all podcasts and at coastrange.org. Coast Range Radio will be back in just a couple weeks. Thank you so much for listening.
Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators, talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Allie and Ramsey. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Well, why don't you start by telling our listeners a little bit about what you do as an educator and where you're from?
So I teach high school music in Massachusetts. This will be year 25. And born, bred, raised in the state. Haven't really lived anywhere else. What about you, Allison?
And I teach third grade in Oakland, California. Will be my 8th year in Oakland and my 15th year in education. Originally, I'm from New Jersey, which is where I am currently. But my career and my school is in Oakland, California.
Gotcha. Great. And tell us what inspired you to become an educator. We always like to ask our guests that.
I'll start. I think deep down, I always knew this is where I was going to end up. When I graduated college and when I was in college, I took a couple education courses and then said, no, I'm going to be a sociologist and that's where I ended up. And I loved it because I got to read and write and learn so much. And when I graduated college and moved to San Francisco, the available jobs were all in after school. And I knew my skill set, even though at that time I really wanted to work in a sandwich shop making sandwiches. But I couldn't get a job in a deli. And so I went back to teaching, started in the after school program in a private school in San Francisco. And here I am. And I love it. And I'm confident that being in the schools in, maybe not in the classroom forever, but being grounded in helping students develop their social emotional skills and ability to communicate through conflict and through, more challenging times in their life is going to be my life's work, amongst other things like that we'll talk about today. But that's great. What got me where I am.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I've known that I wanted to teach music since I was about 14. For me, it was a place where everybody could fit. And that's been a big priority for me in my teaching. That whether it's a performance-based program, which I used to direct lots of, to a much less performance-based program, which is sort of what I do now, I'm still trying to build the same kind of school community and the place where everybody can just, you know, be and you know, and express who they are. Yeah. I did have a middle school teacher who was super, pardon the crappy pun, instrumental in making me a music teacher. His classroom was always the best place, lots of creating and all that. And, yeah, so he's a big reason, big part of the reason too.
Yeah, great. All right, I always love hearing those stories. And before we get into things, one last question. Do either of you hold any sort of union office or position or play any particular role in your union?
I am the executive secretary, recording secretary of my local. I've been on the board of my local for 3 years. I served on my state caucus's NBI committee at the regional assembly this year, and have actually for the past 3 years. I have not played any other state role, but I'm looking to as we go forward.
How about you, Allie?
Nothing on the big scale. I have been my school site rep for the last 5 years. I was our picket captain during our 2019 strike. And then I got asked by our local leadership to be what is called a cluster lead. Our schools are set up into geographical clusters, and then each cluster has a lead that kind of like supports the site reps for that group of schools. So I've done that for the past 3 or 4 years. So in our most recent strike in 2023, I served like supporting 7 schools within my cluster. And that's been an appointed role, and we're trying to shift it so it is an elected role so that members have more voice in who their leads are, as opposed to just being appointed by leadership.
Gotcha. Great.
That's great. So we invited you on the show to talk about Educators for Palestine and the recent NEA Representative Assembly. So that's the National Education Association Assembly that happens once a year. What prompted you to get involved in advocating for the Palestinian people, and why do you believe it's the role of a union to do so?
I'll start. Yeah, so just a little bit of context for me. I was raised in a Jewish household. I'm the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. My mom was born in a refugee camp in Germany after World War II, and moved to the Bronx when she was 4. And so the Zionist Project and the State of Israel has been like very central to my family and me as a young person. And I've done a lot of unlearning around it, and I feel really, really grateful for the experiences and people in my life that have like gotten me to where I am today, to have unlearned so much of the propaganda. When October 7th happened and I started to see the response, not only internationally, but also within my family, I realized that I just had this like deep desire and calling to respond differently as a Jew and as an educator. And simultaneously, one of our union leadership reached out to me as one of the few active Jews in our union and said, "Hey, will you write something for Rep Council about this?" And I was like, yeah. And then she said, will you work with this person who is like a known Zionist in our union? And I said, well, I don't think we're going to have the same, we're having the same reaction to what's happening right now. I don't think our any resolution. And she was like, well, why don't you try? And I was like, okay. So I immediately went to our rank and file caucus and said, hey, we need to write a resolution and get our local Oakland OEA to make a statement. I know you guys are OEA Oregon, we're OEA Oakland. And that kind of started the creation of OEA for Palestine in Oakland. And, you know, for me, looking around at my students, many of whom are from Yemen and Afghanistan and are experiencing this so deeply in their bodies as young people, as they were watching what was unfolding, it was so clear to me that not only was this a political issue, but it was an education issue, it was a union issue, and that labor needed to take a stand. And so that's kind of what got me started in Oakland specifically. We then organized a teach-in, which was a day where we created resources for educators around Oakland to teach about Palestine. And we did that in December. And that just like exploded on the national stage as it was, you know, anti-Semitic and dangerous and, you know, all the things we've been hearing. And so from there, we got connected with Stephen, one of the women I've been organizing with, who unfortunately couldn't be here today because she has an ear infection, somehow got connected through a Signal thread with Stephen. And that's what plugged Oakland into the National Educators for Palestine.
Excellent. How about you, Rand?
Well, I had an encounter 2 years ago in a state caucus meeting at the RA that really, really shook me. I'm an Arab. My father immigrated from Lebanon when he was 17. And I, as a young person, was always discouraged from engaging in certain kinds of conversation. I grew up in suburban Boston and was blessed to live in a fairly diverse community, not economically so much, but ethnically and ethnically really more than racially, but lots of different faiths. And my father kind of drilled into me, okay, you know, you don't talk about your heritage, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about any of these things. And at this particular caucus, I was wearing, and I've been a member of the Arab American caucus for a few years, and I was wearing a ribbon, which on one side had a keffiyeh pattern, and a fellow delegate from my state was very, very upset and expressed this upset in the middle of caucus. I was really shook because I believe, as Dr. Heather McGee does, that, you know, these searching for rights is not a zero-sum game, and to have more rights for Palestinians or whomever, it does not take away from anybody else, not one whit. And so, and as Dr. McGee has written, the unions have played a very strategic role in the past of trying to lift as many boats up as possible. Granted, it also has a deeply racist history that we need to come to terms with. But those are those two experiences, both reading Dr. McGee's book, The Sum of Us, a few years ago, and this particular encounter with a fellow delegate kind of pushed me into this. It's a union role for many reasons. I'm going to piggyback off what Allison said. It is a matter of, we have students, we have colleagues who are from these parts of the world. And whether we enjoy the conversations or not, we all have to learn how to have them. And so a union can play a massive role in helping us do that in a responsible way. Thank you.
Thank you. The 2024 NEARA was held in the first week of July. And what were you hoping to accomplish at the RA?
Yeah, so this was my first RA, and I ran, the wild RA for the first one. I ran with a slate of folks from both OEA for Palestine and our Oakland rank and file caucus, who ran with the purpose of helping support the MBIs around Palestine, and you know, that was our reason for going. And so six of us got elected. There was 17 Oakland delegates total, but six of us from that slate. And for me, I mean, there was so much I did not know going in, and I feel so grateful for Stephen and Ramsey and the other folks who brought us in so open-armed and were teaching us and also letting us share our wisdom at the same time. And it was just, I have talked so fondly about the folks that have been in this work for so many years and how they brought the new people in. But so for me, part of it was just learning about what is the NEA, what is going on the national level. And then in terms of Palestine specifically, I wanted to help support these MBIs. And I know we'll talk about them, but I thought they by the time I had joined, they had already been written and submitted. And I just thought they were all so important. So I wanted to just in whatever way I could help push them forward. That's why I was there. I wanted to meet people from around, just extend the network and build the network of national educators for Palestine and see who else was out there. And I wanted to bring the work of Oakland to this space. Oakland, we move quickly on these things. It's Oakland. It's the home of the Black Panthers, right? We exist in this very, and we have our own issues, but overall and comparatively, we live in this progressive radical bubble. And so, we had our union OEA passed our first resolution about Palestine in October. We were moving quick, and we have that ability to do that. And so I was excited to bring what we, can do in Oakland to the national stage as well. And just have this exchange of ideas and knowledge in this space.
And because we're running a little bit short on time, I would like to get directly to some of the motions you plan to make. So there was a bylaw amendment, resolutions, new business items. So maybe if you could each talk about a couple that were the most significant to you.
That'd be great. Thank you. Well, I have to say, I'm going to take a quick detour. I have to answer the previous question. The most important thing for me was to meet people like Allison. And whatever else happens with the NBIs and with the bylaw amendment, there's the victory. So I'm just very honored for that to happen. Speaking personally, bylaw amendment 4, which I was the maker for, or I am the maker for, it still exists, was a little personal to me. And I think NBIs, while all of them are important, and I'm deeply committed, to seeing all of them succeed, or at the very least to be as brought as far forward as possible. Bylaw Amendment 4, I think, gets Middle Eastern or North African peoples a seat at some tables that we haven't had before. And I think that is, speaking only for myself, one of the more possible important outcomes out of the work of this year's RA, which technically is still not over.
And what was, could you be a little more specific about what that bylaw amendment?
Yes. I'm so sorry. It would ask the NEA to recognize Middle Eastern or North African peoples as a recognized ethnic minority, as the federal government currently does.
Great. Thank you.
And I'll just say quickly for me, MBI 34, around the unendorsement of Biden, that for me was one of my biggest priorities. Not that I necessarily had hope it was going to pass on the NEA floor, and MBI got changed. So really, what we were asking for was for NEA to have a secret ballot for folks to vote. So if the NBI had passed, it would have then just been a secret ballot vote for delegates to reconsider the Biden endorsement. And for me, what I wanted to see out of that NBI was a discussion around our endorsement. And if the biggest union in the country really wanted to go full force behind an administration that still is supporting genocide in a variety of ways I don't think we need to get into the details here.
All right. So here's another question for you. It's what kind of pushback have you gotten on this? I know that there has been pushback on multiple levels, multiple accusations. Have you been accused of being anti-Semitic? What has the toll been on you? What sort of talk about that a little bit?
Well, I first want to say there are folks who have been in the movement, both not as long as myself and longer, and who have had far more challenges, and nothing I'm about to say it should be even discussed in the same breath as the agony and the horror being inflicted on the Palestinian people. But I have had colleagues tell me that I want their children who are in Israel right now to die. I have been told that by old friends that I am no longer safe. And when I ask them what that means, it means that they feel that I wouldn't hide them should it ever become necessary. And I believe very firmly that those feelings are real, and I wouldn't, you know, want to, especially old friends, I wouldn't want to convince them with my words in a conversation that that's not true. I can only act with a gentle yet insistent integrity in my advocacy to undo that perception. Thank you.
Yeah, I think for me, most of the backlash, I've been helping run some of the Educators for Palestine social media accounts. And there has certainly been backlash on Zionist social media accounts. That's kind of par for the course at this point. I think we're all pretty used to it. I know that some Oakland delegates, or not delegates, some Oakland members emailed some members of our leadership and delegation with frustrations around the work we were doing. I unfortunately have not seen those emails, so I'm not quite sure what the accusations were, but I think they were along the same lines of this work is anti-Semitic. That's my understanding about them, but it hasn't been directed towards me personally, just in the work, you know, directed at the work we're all doing generally.
And I guess it's back to me. Let's see, we don't have very much time, but I just have a little follow-up, as I often do. What is your response to these? I mean, Ramsey, you said, like, with your gentle action, you know, persuasion of your actions and your just the way that you exist in the world, you're trying to show your integrity as a friend and a human. But if you were to get in a conversation about this, what is your response to that kind of accusation?
The only thing, I think the most important thing is to understand that a lot of it is a distraction. There are people who would like to not see Palestine be free, who want to argue about tone, who want to argue about what the definition of words mean. They want to take the conversation away from what's happening and talk about the semantics behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing I can do, one of the most important things I can do as an advocate, is to refuse whenever possible to participate in that?
So what happened the day before the RA was set to begin? What did you all plan and how did it go?
Yeah, we planned a rally and little march with Philadelphia educators and activists outside the convention center. And I think our goal for this action was to start bringing attention to what we were doing there and our MBIs. And, you know, we pretty quickly got accused of, you know, protesting the RA, protesting the dinner that was happening that night. And we made it very clear that this action, this rally, was not against anybody, but was to bring people in and let them know what we were doing. And it was amazing. It was really, I thought, very powerful. I was asked to speak as an anti-Zionist Jewish educator, and I felt very held and safe by all the people there, especially in the context of counter-protests happening right down the, you know, on the corner where we were, which is not something we have to deal with a lot in Oakland. They're quieter. They're a little more subtle. But we had a really great rally and march, and marching through downtown Philadelphia, we like marched through this park and it was so hot and all these families were in the sprinklers and the fountains. And they just like, it felt like everybody just kind of like made space for us to move, and like a lot of nodding, and, you know, it was really, really powerful and beautiful. And I think just being able, that was really when we all got to, you know, people being like, I'm from Kansas, I'm from here, I want to be involved. Like, I didn't know you all were doing this. I got your flyer, and just like showing up. It was really powerful. And just seeing the like coordination from around the country to a place, there were no Philadelphia delegates. They're not NEA, they're AFT. And so we had to find and create this coalition. And it was really beautiful, I thought. And I was really, that really, I think, set the tone in this really beautiful and like positive way, right? And we were being baited. We were being baited by counter protesters. They wanted us to get dangerous, violent, you know, all this rhetoric, and we didn't. And it set the tone for how we were going to move through the RA with just this positive message. Super disciplined, stay on message, and it was amazing.
That sounds great.
You give me another reason to regret volunteering to babysit the audio equipment. I really, it's something, that kind of an experience, really sounds lovely in the highest order. And I did eventually get to the final destination, where it was lovely to meet many, many delegates, young and old, many local activists, young and old. That was really quite the beautiful thing. I spent most of that morning running around, having some conversations, formal conversations with some state delegations about bylaw amendment 4, and lots of individual conversation. But yes, that the rally in March was really, it was very beautiful and very well done by all involved.
And I have to say, I saw a lot of it on social media because I follow Educators for Palestine. It looked great. So in our last, like, we have 2 minutes. Talk about what happened on the first day of the RA and the following morning. And if time, where do things stand now and what's next for Educators for Palestine? I know that's a lot to pack in, but.
I can start and then you can do with what's next. Okay, so very quickly, on the first day of the RA, the only really day of being on the RA floor, once we finally got to new business after hours of pomp and circumstance and celebration of us, I guess, the president of NEA, Becky Pringle, had passed the agenda with flexibility, used that flexibility. So all of this was under, you know, it was all kosher, if you will, and decided to skip MBIs 6 through 10, which were the first 5 Palestinian related MBIs that we had put up. And said she was doing this so that we had more time to talk about them tomorrow. They deserved more time to keep everybody safe. And And everybody who was had really been paying attention to what's been going on was whispering, we're not going to have tomorrow because this strike is probably getting called tonight or tomorrow morning. And so it felt very clear that tomorrow may not happen. And so that was very disappointing that we could not even, and we made it through, I think we made it up to MBI 14. So like there was time to get it started and we didn't. And so that felt really, really disappointing. And then at the end of the session, many people had already left. It was 6 o'clock or after we had all already left and then had to go back into the hall for this final vote. She asked the body to suspend the rules in case of a strike, which would allow for two things, all ballots voting to happen via mail. So now we're all getting mail ballots, and for any MBI debate and voting to go to the board of directors as opposed to the delegates. And so those of us, you know, yes, thumbs down for those of you that can't see, which is everybody. And so what that meant was we now no longer have voting rights on our MBIs. We, you know, Educators for Palestine voted as loudly as we could. No on this. We lost by a lot. And that was it. And then the next morning, the the staff workers went on strike. And I want to say for me personally, I support them wholeheartedly. I think they have been treated terribly at the table. And I think they called the strike when they had the most impact. And I support that fully. And that was it. And then the whole NEA RA basically shut down. Many of us were on the picket line with NISO, the staff workers, and now we're getting into what's next, which Ramsey can talk about a little bit.
And we are slightly over time, so if you could just do it as quick as possible, that'd be great.
I echo everything that Allison said, and I very much